Back to more of the Dopey Millennial Show.
How do real life millennials respond?
That was fire.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you. Final hour of the show live here in the Kia Studios. We've done a little producer change. Gone from Eric Slaughter to Dominic Chirosky. So excited to final hour of the show. Have a fellow Dopey Millennial working with me. I did want to mention, as we talked last segment, about college football, just kind of catching everyone up on scores of the day and you know, just kind of the overall theme that this week of games, look, we had three straight weeks of some pretty incredible games, so some dud weeks are going to happen. Feels like this is a bit of a dud week, although could have an incredible game in an hour with LSU, Texas A&M. Still very much on the table, as well as Penn State at Wisconsin. I was talking to Mike Conti earlier this week. And I was like, hey, you got to feel good about your Nittany Lions, you know, nobody's really talking about them, but they're number three and they're just kind of quietly staying afloat up there because they keep winning. And he was like, yeah, well, until we lose this week to Wisconsin. And I was like, oh, okay. I understand the like negativity of the like, we're just a week away from a loss.
Yeah. Where's the faith?
Yeah. Well, but also where's the faith? He has James Franklin as a head coach, so I think that's probably where it lies.
Something.
Yeah, like the like, yeah. But another score that I did want to mention, I'm not trying to like beat them when they're down, but a bit of a rough go today for Georgia Tech against Virginia Tech, as this one where Haynes King unable to go for a second straight week. And I really think Georgia Tech's offense has so many different pieces. I don't want to discount that, but I feel like this team goes as Haynes King goes. It's part of why they recruited him out of Texas A&M. And clearly, when he's not there, Zach Pyron starting today, but was bad enough that he got pulled for Aaron Filo in the third quarter. But yeah, Georgia Tech gets beat by Virginia Tech today, 21-6. So kind of a rough go for the Yellow Jackets moving forward, as there was obviously quite the bit of positivity to start off the season. We didn't know how bad Florida State was going to be still, when it's when, and the way that they did it and all that sort of thing. But it feels like, yeah, really things have kind of gone downhill for the Yellow Jackets since. So hopefully they can find their footing, find their way through the rest of this one. Maybe make that end of the year game against Georgia competitive. It's more fun when that game is competitive. I'll just be honest. That's coming from a dog fan. It's coming from a dog fan. However, let's get right into Dom, you getting in the producer's seat, you being a Dopey Millennial. Always like to do a bit of a producer-involved segment, Ask the Dopey. So without any further ado, I'm turning things over to you, sir.
What's going on, man? What's going on? So I do have a couple of questions here. I took this one, and instead of just asking straight questions, I kind of wanted to do a fact or fiction type deal. So you tell me how you feel about this. Fact or fiction, Jalen Johnson is already Trae Young's best wingman.
Oof. Can he be? Yes. Is he Trae Young's best wingman? No. I'm going to say, as of right now, I feel like John Collins, like, people forget, because things at the end with John got rough, and the broken finger and the shot and the three-point shot, you know, just really kind of falling to pieces, and him not being a fit in what Atlanta was putting together.
Every year dealing with, he's going to be traded, he didn't get traded.
Yeah, it really, I feel like, for a lot of fans, has skewed the perspective, and especially, like, I mean, John's coming off the bench now for the Utah Jazz. Like, things have not gone in a great direction for John Collins. However, at their height, the not only the pick and roll with those two, but the lobs from Trey to John, it just felt like those guys were in sync, and that has been his best running mate. However, I think what is coming with Jalen Johnson gives it absolutely the potential to be that case for you to be able to have that argument in, you know, in 80 games from now. Mm-hmm. It's just part of it has been through the first two games that Jalen Johnson not having his most ideal couple of games.
Right, right.
I think it, you know, it's been very circumstantial. I know people will be quick to be like, oh, he got paid. He's another Hawks player to get paid and then immediately, you know, doesn't perform up to the level of contract. I don't think that's going to be the case with Jalen. I think it's just been pretty circumstantial with the teams and just like, hey, sometimes shots don't fall. But 100% do I believe that those two have the potential to be a great pairing. And I'm very curious to see where Zach is going to fit amongst that as well. As I think that trio can really put something together special that maybe doesn't show up this year, but will in the future.
All right, fair enough, fair enough. All right, switching gears, we'll go over to the Falcons. Obviously, Falcons and Bucks getting ready to go ahead and go their, what, second time now?
Yep.
My question to you, fact or fiction, the winner of that game wins this division?
I think so. I think so. And that comes from me. Call me Homer. I get it. That comes from me believing that Tampa Bay is just too depleted, specifically on Sunday, to be able to beat the Falcons. Doesn't mean they can't do something to pull it off. But I don't care how good your rushing attack is. If you don't have the ability to throw the ball and you've built your offense around, hey, we've got Mike Evans. Pretty freaking incredible wide receiver. Hey, we've got Chris Godwin. Pretty incredible wide receiver. Both of those guys are gone. And now we go from those two guys to like, hey, K-Dot, like, hope you can catch the football, you know, or hey, unnamed, undrafted free agent. We hope you have, you know, a monstrous game. I just don't think Tampa Bay is going to be able to keep up offensively with the Falcons, given that Kirk doesn't do anything stupid. You know, we're not throwing a bunch of picks. and given that the offensive line is able to hold up. But I do think, ultimately, it's going to be the Falcons or the Bucks coming out of this division. And I just really don't see the Bucks being able to win on Sunday. And I mean, if the Falcons win on Sunday, they give themselves that big of a cushion. Just doesn't seem possible for anyone to be able to catch up. And so that's why, you know, Chris Thomas earlier kind of going with, is this a must-win game for the Falcons? I understand the level of importance being placed on this one. It's more of a, it's realizing the goal. It's realizing that if you win on Sunday, you've got the division. I mean, there's just, it feels impossible for it to go any other way. It is Falcons after all, and I know crazy things can happen. But it certainly, it feels like that direction is where things are headed.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think that the winner of this winner of this game will win this division for sure. Next up, obviously Atlanta United dropped game one in Miami. However, fact or fiction, Atlanta United just has Miami's number. They're going to win this upcoming Saturday. And then they're going to put the little guy and his crew, send them back home to Miami, and Atlanta's moving past, getting to the next round.
You know, that thought would keep what has been already an improbable finish to the season going for Atlanta United, because that's part of what we're going to talk with Jason Longshore, Atlanta United analyst, coming up in about 8 minutes from now. But that's been what's part of the improbability of the season is like, I mentioned at the top of the show, I did not expect to be caring about or watching MLS playoffs right now. I expected to be, and I fully understand, like, there are some of you who are going to watch no matter who's in. I'm just not one of those people, and I fully am aware of that and recognize that. However, I didn't think Atlanta would be in, and so I didn't think I'd have to worry about it and concern myself with it. But from what Atlanta did, I mean, honestly, the last month, but specifically Orlando, Montreal, And then the fight that they put up against Miami last night, you know, I was in the middle of calling or working with Steve on the Hawks Radio Network with Hawks and Hornets last night, so I had to wait until this morning to actually watch the game and figure out, like, okay, was this thing really close, or was it just Atlanta was able to hold on just enough? And there was definitely, from like a defensive standpoint, that, I mean, Brad Guzan played absolutely out of his mind in this one to keep Atlanta in it. But it was like, no, they kind of were like, they were good enough. They really did enough to be in it, and Miami was just better. But Miami has put together the type of roster that they should be able to go on a big run and go win the cup.
Yeah, and United was playing on tired legs too.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Third match in seven days.
Yeah,
like that's rough.
Yeah, and that's actually something I want to talk to Jason Longshore about. I want to ask him, like, because that's a big topic of conversation right now. Is it fair that Atlanta had to go about that type of situation? But I think MLS is kind of piggybacking off of Major League Baseball, going like, hey, we're going to make it tough on these wild card teams because you weren't as good, you know, and we're going to reward teams who were good in the regular season. But is it fair that you know, having to play three matches in 1 week and then you go an entire week, you know, and you get some rest between playing the next one? To get back to your fact or fiction, I think fiction. I do think Miami is the better team, and they're going to end up winning this series. But it certainly won't be without a fight, which I think says a lot about Rob Valentino and his coaching style. And hopefully this bodes well for his next opportunity. But then, you know, good on the guys who are here for Atlanta United, that they are potentially going down without a fight. Not saying that they can't win.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know.
All right, and the last one before we get out of here, fact or fiction, because we were talking about Uncrustables earlier, grape jelly over strawberry jelly, fact or fiction?
All right, so here is going to be a very controversial take from me in general, and I'm going to do it as quickly as I possibly can. I'm not really a jelly guy. Don't really care for jelly, period. Could do without it in its existence ever. However, all day, every day, no doubt about it, grape jelly over strawberry jelly. It's not even not even something to discuss. I would not, with my own lips, touch strawberry jelly.
It is with taste.
Disgusting. Grape jelly, don't really need it, don't really care for it, but I'll if it's on there already, I'll eat it. All right. Coming up next, Jason Longshore, a man who has been in the MC for a barbecue festival today, is going to join the Dopey Millennial Show, talk about Atlanta United's close loss to Inter Miami last night. It's all coming up next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
We're back with the Dopey Millennial Show.
Good, bad. It's going to be like a drama every week. It's going to be awesome.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you on this Saturday evening. A little more than 30 minutes away from when we'll turn things over to LSU and Texas A&M, who will hopefully save the day of college football and give us a truly competitive game. As it's, I'm looking at the TVs in front of me right now, and Bama's up 27-0 on Missouri after the Tigers lost Brady Cook. And then number one, Oregon, up 35-9 on Illinois in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, not a lot of great closely contested matchups today, but hopefully the SEC can save us. And then who knows? Maybe Wisconsin will keep things close against Penn State. But we're going to go out to the waitfor.com hotline right now, bring in Atlanta United analyst Jason Longshore, who has had a fun run over the past week. A lot of miles put on some airplanes for Jason, as well as his broadcast partner, Mike Conti. So, Jason, how are you after being a Masters of Ceremonies for the Decatur Barbecue Festival today?
I'm exhausted. I'm not going to lie to you. I am very, very tired. It's been, I mean, look, with all of the games and the travel, it's been a lot. So when you look back at last night for Atlanta United and you put all of that into that context of having to go down to Orlando on decision day, having to win, having to get some extra help. They got it. Okay, cool. You come home that night. You have a regen day on Sunday, a light training session Monday. You fly to Montreal, which is not a short flight.
Sure.
Go up there. That's a dramatic, crazy game on Tuesday night. You get through penalties, and you get on the plane, and you fly back, and you do the same thing again with regen, and then a light training session, and then you fly to Fort Lauderdale, and then you have another crazy game that has you concede early, has two first-half injuries. You have to make a couple of subs at halftime, and somehow this team stayed in it the whole way through and nearly found a way to level it and send it to penalties last night. Just a crazy week for me lately, and a crazy week for Atlanta United.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say is, it's funny because I feel like maybe not from a travel perspective, but just from a covering a team with so many games going on and such a short stretch. Like, I have felt it before with the Hawks of being like, man, I am really tired. And then I go like, and I didn't play in any of these games. Like, that's when you realize of what the athletes are truly putting themselves through in this stretch. But as far as, is there anything to really learn about this team over this past week of, is it anything more than just kind of like a never give up attitude or more than that, just given you're in a situation where at least, I'll be the spokesperson for the group of people who were like, I did not expect to be here. I did not expect to be watching, MLS playoffs that included Atlanta United at this point, quite honestly.
Yeah, it's been wild to see how this team has embraced this attitude, this underdog attitude. That's not where Atlanta United wants to be as an underdog. We've had this conversation over the years about Atlanta United and their aims, and they want to be one of the biggest clubs in this hemisphere. And,
sure.
When you have a big club that, for whatever reason, sometimes it's injuries, sometimes it's just things don't go your way, and you turn into that underdog mentality, it's been fun to watch on the road over these past about 6 weeks or so, because at home, I think you've seen the weight of expectation at times and maybe a burden of expectation to be the favorite, to be in control, to play, to force the issue in the game, to be very attack minded. And it's been a struggle in the games against Nashville and against Montreal that end up putting you into the situation. But if you go back to the win in Charlotte, the second game back from Leagues Cup, and that's a win on the road, and then you go get points at Red Bull and at Philadelphia, places that have historically been very difficult for you. You go to Orlando on decision day and you win that, and you go to Montreal and you survive that. Like, that was five straight results on the road. And then last night against the best team in MLS history, you dealt with a lot of crazy things in that game. And I don't think anybody would have really blamed the team if it ends up being a little bit of an ugly loss, but it wasn't. There were opportunities late to find an equalizer. It was gritty. It was determined. It was resilient. It was really inspiring is the word that I used last night. If these guys can deal with all of that and be shorthanded and be beat up and be tired and still find a way to compete at that level, if you're a fan of this team, it's got to be inspiring to you.
Absolutely. Talking with Jason Longshore on the WadeFord.com hotline. Jason, of course, Atlanta United analyst here on the station. You can follow him on social media at Longshoe. Jason, when it comes to last night's game, I wrote in my notes, Brad Guzan, ... How? Just because from the simple fact of, like, we started the season with Brad being a guy of like, yeah, this might be the time where things are passed off to Josh and like we're in a new era of looking for that leader and all that sort of thing. And then to be at this point of the season and it felt like he was just playing out of his mind. How did you see that coming together for Brad?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of his best ever performances for Atlanta United, and it's after a game where he made a number of big saves and made a save in the shootout in Montreal to get you to this point. And that's after a game in Orlando where he had things to do as well. You know, like, I think that run of games on the road that this team has been on and that attitude that this team has shown, a big reason for that is their captain. Brad Kazan is so important to this group in history, but right now with this group, maybe being a little bit younger, maybe being a little more unproven, I think Brad Kazan is rallying the group as well as any captain that I can think of. And, you know, Max McCarty said to me in an interview, and I've heard plenty of others echo it, when, you know, you start talking about whether it's a Ring of Honor or a, you know, Wall of Fame or whatever it ends up being for Atlanta United, and you're starting to get into that conversation, you know, sure, you're almost a decade in, Brad Kazan should be the first one. And look, I know Joseph Martinez, and I know Miguel Almiron, and I know Michael Parkhurst and Jeff Lorenowitz. You have club legends now. This team's been around long enough for that. But Brad Kazan has been here from almost day one. He's played more games than anybody, and that record's going to stand for a long time. And the things that he's done in some of the toughest moments have been just so impressive, and it says so much about his character.
All right, Jason, when it comes to what you're feeling the effects of right now, which is three games being played in the stretch of 7 days, I've seen so much conversation as of late over whether this format of decision day being when it is, the wild card game, and then that to continue on the first round being so tightly compacted, is it fair? All of these sorts of things. I'm sure you as a broadcaster would like more time in between. Do you think that's the direction that Major League Soccer should go? Or is this just Major League Soccer kind of doing maybe like Major League Baseball, where they reward the teams who have been really good throughout the regular season, and it's just straight up difficult for those lower seeded teams who are trying to fight their way into the postseason?
I think it's what you just said. And, you know, I totally understand the frustration. But for me, it's not about the format. You know, I do take issue with an aspect of how it's played out for Atlanta United. I'll get there in a second.
Okay.
But the format itself, could you just stick with eight teams if you wanted to? Sure. If you want to go to nine and have the wild card game, you have to have it on short rest after decision day. And then that team is going to go in on short rest into the best of three with the top seed. That rewards the top seed. The wild card shouldn't get any advantage against the top seed. The best of three, I actually really like compared to a single game, which for a while there, MLS had gone to single game playoff format all the way across the board. And it's too fluky to me. It brings up too much chance. Three games with the higher seed getting two of those if needed. I like it, and I like that it's not aggregate in the sense that it prioritizes going and getting a result. So I've liked the best of three. I would be completely fine if they went to a two-game aggregate score, completely did that, I'd be fine. That doesn't give the higher seed as much of an advantage, though. Yeah, you get the second game, but doesn't give you as much of an advantage for your regular season play.
Sure.
Here's my issue, though, with this season and the way this went down. There's no reason why you have to push Atlanta United to be in Montreal on Tuesday and then in Fort Lauderdale on Friday. That game could have been tonight. That game could have been Sunday. That game could have been Monday, where there's games in this best of three. That was too much, and it didn't have to be that way. You could have still given Miami, of course, you're going to play a team that played in the midweek. They're going to get an advantage. Look, they deserve it. That's the best team in regular season history.
Yeah.
They deserve to get seeded in that way and get a little bit of an advantage against a wild card winner. But you don't have to go Tuesday, Friday. That did not have to happen. That was done, I guess, because they thought by separating that game out, it was going to give more exposure with Apple TV, with Inter Miami, with Lionel Messi, with Luis Suarez, with all the stars. And you got to play those cards. I get it. But that could have been tonight or Sunday or Monday. Separate it out on Monday if you want to do that. and give Atlanta United a little more reasonable time to be better prepared and be a little bit better rested and maybe not have a hamstring injury to Steon Gregerson.
Yeah. All right. Final one for you, Jason, and kind of going with that theme of injury, whether it's Gregerson or whether it's, what is it, dislocated or separated shoulder for Brooks Lennon? Like, what are these injuries?
Sounds like, yeah.
What is that looking like for a week from now when these two teams are at Mercedes-Benz Stadium?
No way to know right now, unfortunately. The hamstring for Gregerson worries me because those are usually more than a week. Hopefully it's minor and he might be able to play a part. Lennon's is completely unknown. He was back in the locker room after the match, and he was on the charter flight back with us after the match. So, you know, I know there was a lot of concern when it was said he went to the hospital. I believe that might have been just down to getting things checked as quickly as possible to figure out the best form of treatment and move forward. Brooks Lennon's one of the toughest guys you'll find. He's been one of the most durable guys for Atlanta United over the years. So if he's in any way able to go, he's going to go. You should get Ronald Hernandez back as well after coming down ill overnight after making the trip with the team. So I don't know. Right now, for this team, it is just rest for a couple of days off. Just recover, sleep, because sleep patterns are completely thrown off for these guys.
Sure.
And then get back out on the training pitch, I would assume, on Tuesday. Ease back in and get back into a somewhat normal schedule as you get ready for your season to be on the line on Saturday night.
That is Jason Longshore, Atlanta United analyst. Give him a follow on social media, at Longshore. Jason, thank you so, so much for giving us some of your time after, like we said, an extremely busy week.
You know, I got you anytime you need it.
Absolutely. All right, when we get back, final segment of the show. Should we be concerned that, should we be concerned about Falcons quarterback room? Conspiracy theories? Something to talk about. We'll get to it next on the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Getting your weekend sports talk fix here with the Dopey Millennial Show.
My ears are bleeding.
From Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the final segment of the Dopey Millennial Show. I am Caleb Johnson. Have enjoyed these last 3 hours. As I mentioned at the top of the show, it's been a little bit of a while. It's been a time, you know, because during football season, we've usually got college football games on Saturdays. We've got NFL on Sundays, as well as this Sunday, we will have Hawks going on as they go to OKC. For that one. So there's limited time on the weekends for lowly guys like me, but always thankful when I get these opportunities to come hang out with you guys and you know, talk sports. But on my show, on the Dopey Millennial Show, I always like to end things on a lighthearted, fun note. And so we do so with News You Can Lose.
Taking a look at non-sports related news with News You Can Lose on the Dopey Millennial Show.
You can let these stories go in one ear, out the other, and we're going to start with one that when I first saw the lead, Mark Raimondi of ESPN, who covers the Atlanta Falcons, did a really incredible job, I think, with a pretty fun piece because it was talking about the Falcons quarterback room and conspiracy theories, which, if you're listening to this and you know which camp you're in, you're either all in on conspiracy theories or you're the person who's like, yeah, those are fun, but, you know, like, we're not crazy. So it feels like people are pretty one way or the other of like, you know, no one will listen to me on this, but it's fact. However, Mark did a story talking with quarterback Kirk Cousins and quarterback's coach T.J. Yates, who apparently have a whiteboard in the QB room that has a long list of conspiracy theories. that they apparently, in their free time, like to discuss the legitimacy of such conspiracy theories. So this happens with Kirk Cousins, TJ Yates, backup Michael Penix Jr., as well as, and yes, it still feels weird anytime I say this, practice squad quarterback Nathan Peterman. How is that man still in the NFL? I will never understand. Five interception Peterman. Like that is, I'm sorry, Mark Sanchez has butt fumble. Nathan Peterman has five interceptions. And was it the first quarter or the first half? I can't remember. Either one.
First half.
Okay. Really bad. And it just, like, he never looked like an NFL quarterback, but somehow has stuck around the league. Good for him. Never am going to be mad at a man for making his money. I just don't understand it. However, back to the story. Got a little sidetracked there. I didn't realize the tension was there. That one's been bothering me for a while.
Yeah, he's one of the ones where every time I see his name pop up on a roster or on someone's practice squad, why?
I will never understand why you go out of your way to go sign that man. But hey, like I said, not pocket watching. Let that man do his thing. He must be a very fine young man who teams feel very good to have in the room with them. And is a part of this group, Kirk Cousins, TJ Yates, Michael Penix Jr., Nathan Penix, who like to discuss conspiracy theories. Now, apparently, this started back with Taylor Heinicke, who was on the Falcons squad. Obviously, is now he got traded to the Chargers before the season began, that whole type of thing. But when I found out that Taylor Heinicke was the one who started this whole thing, I was like, that checks out. A quick little Google search of Taylor Heinicke, and you'll find out some interesting things about the guy. He's a interesting guy, besides the point. Apparently, during training camp, they started this, though, where they just like to go through conspiracy theories, such as the John F. Kennedy assassination, the moon landing. Of course, that one's always going to be that was always going to be top three on the list. The origins of the Denver airport.
Okay. I like those.
Made the list. And, of course, this doesn't really feel like a conspiracy theory. This feels like full on legitimacy, but hey, maybe I'm finding myself in this camp. What's going on at Lake Lanier? And is there any,
it's not a conspiracy.
Yeah. Right.
What happens
like when people go there and die,
we know.
You kind of can't be like, oh, wow, this is weird that we sank a city to get this lake. And now people go there and just poof, die. And I remember one of the ones, it was either this summer or last summer, where someone died there and they said that it was in 3 feet of water. And it was like, so you're telling me the guy could have stood up and lived, but something happened and he couldn't get up and he died. Like,
now
you know,
let him go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, see, I feel like I would enjoy this room already, because keeping it light, keeping it fun. But apparently Michael Penix Jr. recently brought one to the table, a conspiracy theory of, do McDonald's employees not want to clean the ice cream machine, so they claim it's broken? Is that what is happening with McDonald's ice cream for all of these years? Because, you know, it's really just laziness on the employees of not wanting to deal with the cleaning process. I kind of could buy into that one.
I'm sure there's a good portion of that's what it is.
Yeah.
I'm willing to say like 30% of the time you've been told no, it's because of that.
Yeah. Now, I remember that there was part of this where whoever owns the ice cream machines in McDonald's, it's a proprietary business, and they signed a contract with McDonald's that they alone are the only ones who can fix them. Like, you just can't call your local handyman to come fix the ice cream machine.
Yeah.
And that's part of the backlog of what ends up in their, you know, the ice cream machines being broken. But I like that the rookie bringing some things to the table. And so when I asked earlier, should we be concerned that the Falcons quarterback room is getting into conspiracy theories? Absolutely not. I think this is fun. I do find it, it feels like it ages them a bit. Like, to hear that Kirk Cousins is bouncing around conspiracy theories, you know, kind of thing in their free time doesn't really surprise me, because he kind of strikes me as the guy. You know, he's a little older in the league, that sort of thing. But it feels like maybe conspiracy theories, a thing that can bring everybody together, of being like, I don't know, like the wind isn't blowing on the moon, and so how did we get that in the video? Like the whole, you know, we just start diving in on this. I remember I learned about the Denver airport one when I went to Denver, because there's something about like you can look at the horse out front and its eyes will light up.
Yeah, the statue. Yeah, it has the blue horse with the red eyes.
And then there's like secret areas of the Denver airport that you can discover and all these different sorts of things. It was under construction when I was there a few years back. And so I feel like I didn't get to explore quite as much as I would have liked to. But yeah, no, I just felt like this was a really good story by Mark Raimondi of ESPN on conspiracy theories when it comes to the quarterback room for the Falcons. Final thing I want to get to on News You Can Lose is apparently Bill Belichick is involved in a radio controversy in Boston. So apparently, as it has been thoroughly discussed, Bill Belichick is dating Jordan Hudson, who is 23 years old. The whole story of she asked him about her homework on a flight. They struck up a conversation and are now dating. It's a whole thing. Well, apparently, a regular on a Boston radio station, let's see, Kiss 108. This is Lisa Ackery, or Winnie Ackery, I should say, says that she thought that she could be a better gymnast or a cheerleader than Jordan Hudson, who was apparently a part of the cheerleading squad at her local college or whatever. They challenged each other. Bill Belichick wore a shirt for Bridgewater State University, where his girlfriend went, in a photo to show his support. But how crazy that Bill Belichick is finding himself dating someone in a radio controversy in Boston. It's really weird and bizarre, but that's just one of those. Had to throw it out there. All right, coming up next, 8th-ranked LSU going to Texas A&M. That is about to kick off pretty soon. We've got Falcons tomorrow, 11 a.m. pregame, 1 o'clock start, and then you've got the Hawks and the Thunder, 6:30 for a 7 o'clock tip off. That's all coming up next. Shout out to you, Dom. Thank you for producing the final hour of the show. Eric, as well as being involved. I'm Caleb Johnson. This has been the Dopey Millennial Show. You guys take care.